plate a potential nugget.
And changing topics, Tom, one of the other pieces I'm curious about is the feedback loop when we learn something, right? In a world where so much is available on, you know, YouTube and Coursera and Udemy and all these MOOCs, you know, there are a few skills where there is a benefit of having somebody watch us and give feedback to us real time for us to learn. What have you, in your attempt to learn these five skills, what have you learned about, you know, the limitations of online learning and the benefits of having somebody, you know, walk this journey with us? Can you talk a little bit about the role of the feedback here?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think there are some skills, some things we would want to learn that where immediate or personal feedback is much more important. There are other things that are a bit more, let's say, mechanistic or much more could be sort of picked up by simply observing. But there are things, you know, for example, let's say singing. You know, I had various forms of feedback when I was trying to learn to sing. One of these, for example, was simply an app on my phone called Perfect Pitch. And it's, you would open the app and sing a set of scales into it, and it would give you a score of 0 to 100 saying how well you had done. And I will say in the beginning, I was literally in the 50s or 60s, and it got to the point through repetition and practice where I was able to get, you know, let's say 100 fairly consistency or the high 90s. So that's that motor skill part of singing. For those people out there who might think that it's purely an innate talent, you know, you can become a better singer purely by doing this. But that's sort of only half the picture. You know, that sort of, it showed me that I was getting better over time, but it didn't exactly show me why. And that's where the coach I was working with, vocal instructor, came in and you know, actually while I was singing, really intently listening to me and intently watching my whole set of vocal muscles work and giving me very precise corrections at the moment. And it was very sort of a almost intimate and physical process too, because the whole body is involved, and to, you know, correct me on my posture and all sorts of things that a person would not necessarily be aware of themselves. Just you know, working at home or trying to follow along online. So I think there are the more complex skills, you know, just have that, almost need that, you know, sort of constant monitoring. And you know, there's some discussion in the literature whether positive feedback is more important than negative. And I think positive feedback is probably more important, because there are something like singing, and there are more ways to go wrong than there are to go right. So you should really emphasize the times when the person has gotten it right, because they are probably aware, number one, that they've gotten it wrong. Mm. So, and then there's the motivational component. It just, you know, it simply makes the learner feel better to hear that they're doing well. Which is not to say it needs to be sugar coated. I mean, you know, you should be given, it needs to have a corrective aspect. So you don't want to have a coach who's simply telling you everything's great all the time. Mm. That doesn't really work either. But it's a very important part of it. And the last thing I'll say is just the frequency of feedback can be really helpful. One of the problems with surfing is that the feedback loops can be very long. What I mean is that sometimes when you go to the ocean, you might only, during the course of an hour of surfing, catch 6 or 7 waves, or try to catch 6 or 7 waves because of, you know, what the ocean is doing that day. And an instructor pointed out to me, you know, can you imagine trying to learn the guitar if you could only strum 6 or 7 times an hour? I mean, that's just it's not the most efficient way to learn. So, you know, sometimes the feedback loops are not, you know, tight enough. So it's hard to learn from each. You simply don't get as much practice or as much chance to be observed, as much chance to learn from your mistakes when there are fewer opportunities to actually do the thing. So that's just another aspect that can come into it.
And, you know, I'm reminded of, you know, let's say maybe a forward in soccer, you know, you get the ball once in maybe 10 minutes, 15 minutes from the defenders to the midfield to the forward, and you need to sort of, you need to score. And of course, in practice, you probably simulate those situations hundreds and thousands of times. But in the, if you really look at match practice, you know, it's just these occasional passes that come to you and you need to sort of score. I can imagine training for, you know, match readiness, especially if you're sort of in some of these positions, can be tricky.
Yeah, it's a very good point, which I hadn't thought about. But soccer was not one of my skills, so I don't say anything else about that. But I did play soccer, but I was defense. So you know, we. Okay.
To build on what Tom says, I often feel that the biggest value add in feedback is that it often comes in our blind spot. I've observed this in the work I do with leaders, and I've observed this as a student when I'm learning something. Let me share a couple of instances from my learning experience. There was this one instance where I was trying to play a piece of melody at a high tempo, and I noticed that my four fingers were getting jammed as I was trying to move up and down the fretboard. I spent a week trying, and when I went back, my teacher looked at the way my thumb was moving and he said it was a thumb that was causing the slowness in movement, and if I corrected that, it would help me get to the next level. I was so busy focusing on my index, middle, ring and pinky that I hadn't paid attention to how my thumb was moving, and that was something totally in my blind spot. A different example, when I was learning ball juggling a couple of decades back, I remember I was trying to transition from three ball juggling to four balls, and I remember that I was struggling there for a while, and I kept dropping the balls in the process. After trying for a while, I went to my teacher, and this was a guy in a shop called Odd Balls in Camden Town in London that sold juggling equipment. He looked at me and said, there was a problem with my eyes. He said that in three ball juggling, the eye is normally focused on the one ball that's in the air at the top of the flight. But this approach breaks down when you've got four balls, when you have two balls in the air at any point in time. And you cannot afford to focus on one ball, then the other one would drop. So you need to find a way of looking through both the balls, but somehow maintaining a peripheral view so that you don't drop them. Now this is such a nuanced insight that there was no way I could have picked this up from YouTube. The other thing I tell the leaders I work with is that it would be helpful for me to observe them in the stadium, not just interact with them in the locker room. In the current Zoom environment, it's a little easier to be a fly on the wall in some of these conversations, and that can be helpful in unearthing some relevant data rather than rely on hearsay on what happened. It gives me an opportunity to pick up things that sometimes might be in the blind spot of the leader where they're in the thick of things.